So Brian Stevenson has given us four things to do that he believes are critical to changing the world. Do you know them? What are those four things? We've devoted four Sundays to them this month. Call them out. Get proximate to the marginalized and the suffering. You cannot change the world from a distance.
Change the narratives.
Change the narratives that sustain inequality and injustice. Three. Do uncomfortable things. Be willing to step outside your comfort zone to do the things that take courage to do. And four.
Stay hopeful.
That's what we're working on today. It is key, he says, Brian Stevenson says, we cannot compromise on this, staying hopeful. He says that hopelessness is the enemy of justice. Hopelessness is the enemy of justice. It takes courage to stay hopeful when our hearts are broken again and again by not just the pain and the suffering and the heartbreak that are a part of every person's life, but this intense world that we are living in right now, where norms of civility in public life have broken down to a point I have never seen them in my lifetime, where the violence that is wrought on innocent and unarmed people has become more visible and can be almost unbearable to see. I am not going to recite the litany of why Brian Stevenson works so hard in the world, why he founded the Equal Justice Initiative, fighting mass incarceration, the school-to-prison pipeline, and the death penalty, which was racist in its origins, and the outcomes are horribly racist. So many of you have read a past year's UU Common Read, The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. This country is the most punitive of all countries. We have the highest rate of incarceration in the world. It's painful to say those words, that is a brutal fact about our country. Now, this service, wrapping up the four challenges from Brian Stevenson and wrapping up the monthly theme of courage, this service is about staying hopeful. And that's something that I, as a minister, must attend to, must work myself, must study, must address. I'm an Iliff School of Theology graduate, but I was also privileged during seminary to travel to Chicago for one of our Unitarian Universalist seminaries, Meadville Lombard. And I took a preaching class from the Reverend Bill Schultz White. He is former president of the UUA. He was executive director of Amnesty International for 12 years, and then for many years after that, he was also president and CEO of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, which is our faith's human rights organization. So in that class, he told a story. He was visiting the Darfur refugee camps in the early 90s. He talked in his Berry Street lecture about the unforgettable smell of the place, the body fluids, the smell of human despair. He met a woman who had a piece of turquoise glass around her neck. It was probably some stray glass, but it was beautiful amidst 800,000 refugees. Reverend Schultz spoke to the woman through the Arabic translator and asked about her necklace, and she said, "It is me." And he thought she had been mistranslated. "It's hers, the necklace is hers." And no, she said, "No, it is me." And it became clear to him, he says, that despite the degradation, the mud, the excrement, the smell, despite all that, she held on to a beauty within herself. She knew, "I am more than this horror that surrounds me." Thich Nhat Hanh is a Zen Buddhist monk from Vietnam. He lived through the devastating wartime pillage of his homeland during the Vietnam War. And he responded with a refusal to take sides, but he simply rebuilt villages with his group of monks and nuns. So neither side trusted him because they would just go back and rebuild villages no matter who had bombed them. They would do it again and again. And he wrote a poem called For Warmth, in response to these bombings of Vietnamese villages. For warmth, I hold my face between my hands. No, I am not crying. I hold my face between my hands to keep my loneliness warm. Two hands protecting, two hands nourishing, two hands to prevent my soul from leaving me in anger. Thich Nhat Hanh says that hope is important because it can make the present moment less difficult to bear. If we believe that tomorrow can be better, we can bear a hardship today. But it's not simple, is it? We cannot go back to some mythical, magical time when everything was simple and everybody got along. If we were blind to the white supremacist culture that lessens us all, every one of us, we can't be blind anymore. We cannot unknow what we now know. As we're working to resist white supremacy culture, that water in which we all swim, that brutality that makes it less safe for people with browner skin than me to simply walk out the front door in the morning. It's more than the racial divide. We know that it's the dominator culture that privileges white males, able-bodied, heterosexual, and ideally Christian, oriented towards protection of property rather than care of persons. That's the dominator culture that says that's privileged over everyone else. You might be worn out by it. You might be despairing. And yet, Bryan Stevenson tells us, and I tell you, it is our responsibility to stay hopeful. It's a civic responsibility. So what gives me hope personally? You do. You do every week. Every week, seeing your courage and your willingness to learn and grow and stretch beyond how you are using your privilege and your resources and your generosity to move towards that more beautiful world we all know is possible, creating a center for spiritual exploration and justice making here at Boulder Valley. Building Bridges and my young friend Jayla Hemingway, who knows deep in their bones they can make a difference in the world, and they are doing it. You might know about me that I am deeply involved in permaculture, and I resonate with what Jeff Lawton, a white permaculture leader, has said, that almost every human problem can be solved in a garden. Now, that's another sermon, really, but I find hope in the fact that it isn't just privileged white people that believe this, and I have discovered many others who give me hope. Here is the Reverend Dr. Denise Hall on the day I graduated from ILIF. She is an ILIF grad as well, and she's a veterinarian, and she's the author of Agrihoods, a book about the urban agriculture and sustainability. Here's Ron Finley, the gangsta gardener. He was in Denver recently and visited the urban farm in Montbello. Now here's Denise again behind me, but next to her is Beverly Grant, local founder of Mobetta Greens. Now I've been hearing about Beverly Grant and Mobetta Greens for years and finally met her a few weeks ago when Denise and I were touring the Dahlia campus for health and well-being. They have an amazing garden and greenhouse there. And Beverly runs their farmer's market using produce grown right there at MLK and 34th Street in what was previously a food desert. Here's Teresa Sanchez and Devon Pena, and we're in the San Luis Valley, central Colorado, where Devon is the founder of the Acequia Institute, whose mission is supporting water democracies, resilient agriculture, and environmental justice. And we know, I hope you know, that environmental justice is racial justice. Devon is a scholar, a professor, an activist, an acequia farmer, and a seed saver. I found scholarship around the indigenous roots of permaculture techniques we white people didn't discover or invent at all. Here is a picture of Devon's most recent book, Mexican Origin Foods, Foodways, and Social Movements, Decolonial Perspectives. He speaks of the Mesoamerica diaspora and the decolonial food movement. He traces texts from the 1500s and 1600s Central America with sustainable permaculture techniques I knew came from Germany, but perhaps they were co-arising at the same time on different continents. Enough of the slideshow. In fact, I do have hope. In the midst of the intensity of our current times, and at times my own confusion and hesitancy about what to do next, what's the right thing for me to do. So how about you? What gives you hope? We'd love to hear from you. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to have a text-to-screen piece. So anybody that has a device that could get to a browser, go to menti.com and type in those six digits. The question is, what gives you hope in these challenging times? Give us your best one, the one thing. There's a lot of you, and if you just all do it a bunch, we'll never get out of here. So think of that one thing that gives you hope, and you can text it in there. Now, if you don't have one of those devices, there should be some paper nearby you and pencils or pens in the back of the seat pocket that you can use. And you can bring them to Lynn and Veronique right here, who will type them in. So they will end up on the screen. So sit back and see what inspires your fellow congregants. And we'll listen to Tad's musical reflection on hope. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going to end here with a poem. Thank you, all of you, for sharing those. So this poem gives me hope from a young woman who gives me hope, Adrienne Marie Brown. The title is A Complex Moment. Over and over again, it becomes known, the peace we seek is seeking us. The joy of full bud, awaiting our attention, justice in our hands, longing to be practiced. The whole world learning from within. This thrilling moat in the universe, laboratory, labyrinth. Internalized demands. You are the one you are waiting for. Externalized love. Binds us together into a greater self. A complex movement, a generative abundance, an embodied evolution. Learn to be here. Critique is a seductress. Her door is always open. Who cares if we get some? We are going further. We are going past reform to wonder. This requires comprehension that cannot fit into words. It's out beyond our children, out beyond the end of time. There is a ceaseless cycle, a fractal of sublime, and we come to create it, to soil our hands and faces. Loving, loving, and loving ourselves and all our places.